listen to the Masters Radio. Get in touch with God.
Get in touch with God.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
DS 106 Good Spell. Turn your radio on.
This is the DS106 Good Spell, fixing splendidly since 2013 on DS106 Radio for Life. One of 106 bullets for blog posts, 100 from blog post 106 published by the DS106 shrink at 106am on Tumblr at the end of the headless 13 run of DS106. Gospel radio for the DS106 generation. Mantras and koans that explore the open online course Digital Storytelling 106. Meditations and rambles about education, openness, open education, art, fun and learning. I'm John Johnson, and with me as usual is Mariana Finnis. Good evening, Mariana.
Hello, good evening. How are you, John? How is everything up north?
Quite well. Our autumn is turning out pretty nicely. Unless you're a rugby fan, which I'm not particularly, so I'm not as depressed as quite a lot of other Scottish people today.
You've been taking some beautiful autumn photos. I've noticed on Twitter in a few places. There was a lovely one of sort of a reflection on a lake, something that you've been visiting.
You just need to sort of stick your cat. I'm just taking these on my phone. You just need to stick your phone in the air at the moment, and something is nice. It's just everything's turning, and the light's been nice, and yeah, it's been lovely. After our summer in Scotland this year was a washout, and we're turning out to have a great Indian summer, I guess. Yourself, keeping well?
Yes, everything good. We've had long walks today. We had I love the British weather forecast sometimes. This morning it was, you're going to have a very usable day.
Yeah, brilliant.
This is for our friends in the US, because of course, you know, our kind of, you know, the art of weather forecasting in the UK is something that that they don't do quite the same way elsewhere.
No.
But a usable day, can you imagine that?
Well, I hope you used it well, Mariana.
I used it well. Just lots of walks and lots of, you know, doing stuff outside, because it ain't raining, but it's gonna rain.
Yeah, that sounds good.
There you go.
So,
what are we talking about today?
Well, as I said, this is one of 106 bullets. It's actually three of 106 bullets that we've clumped together. So
we're clumping.
I guess we'll read them out and then dig into them. So there's bullet number 56. What is the difference that makes a difference? Using the web to build relationship and learn together is not the same as running or participating in a MOOC. Bullet number 57. No, DS106 is not a MOOC. And bullet number 58. It is a group of people who love story using the web to weave them. So we can see how those are linked, but the hinge point, I'm thinking, is this: what is the difference that makes a difference? And using the web to build relationships and learn together is not the same as running or participating in a MOOC. So why is it not the same as a MOOC?
Well, it's interesting in the light of, you know, time. When we had the prisoner run just now of DS106, we had this conversation as well. There was a participant that really just participated on the actual prisoner run, and then I haven't really seen him around much. And I think that's quite illustrative of, you know, of some of the difference. I think there are people that come onto DS106, I guess the people who are at the university, not all of them, but maybe, you know, some of them, they just come to do a course. They complete the course, they go through each week, and when it's done, and they move on. And yes, you know, Jim and some of us will talk about how, you know, there is an open participants community and how you could continue honing your skills and how you could continue to participate. But not everybody chooses to do that. I guess. And I suppose that's the distinction that I am aiming at here, which is it's a very different thing thinking about ES-106 as a course that you do, mm-hmm. and once it's done, it's done, versus the idea of a of a community of people where you build relationships and you're really using the web to tell tell stories together. I mean, in that sense, I guess the DS-106 that I belong to, as it were, isn't a MOOC, because I can't, that was the thing that I suppose I discovered when I wrote that post, that it wasn't just a course and that it wasn't necessarily something that ever needed to end in some ways.
We're trapped.
That's right, Hotel California.
Yeah, I'll never leave. I see Alan's listening from Puerto Rico, so... trapped and never leave, Alan.
Trapped weaving stories behind the scenes.
Yeah. But, I mean, I think one of the things about certainly the CMOOCs is the idea that you do have relationships and you do have a community. But I guess the thing about that's different about DS-106 is that usually the people who are leading the course are all over it, if you know what I mean. That in any MOOCs I've been in, or some of the MOOCs I've been in, you're kind of left to yourself to pal up with people, for want of a better way of putting it. And DS-106 is almost like whoever's leading the course, and it's been a variety of different people, are very much active. And I think that's one of the things about it, is it's not that massive. And that's easier probably to do, but it's also down to, I think, the energy of the people who are running the course, and very often participating with other people at the same time.
Yes, and of course, you know, that sort of middle bullet, I think that the DS-106 is not a MOOC. I think that's kind of the title of one of Alan's articles, I think, that he wrote about it, and talking precisely that actually, it's not the massive element isn't really there, and actually that when you have, for example, a number of sections from the university, then you have several people who might be teaching it at the same time, I guess two or three at least, and in that sense, I suppose it is less. It's actually quite a structured thing. You know, and you do your first week and you do your, I mean, it actually is quite a structured thing if you think about it, compared to some of the, some say CMOOCs that I've attended or participated in. So in that sense, I guess it's different. I quite like this new definition that I think it's for the Sherlock Holmes experience. That you know was happening relatively recently. They called it a MOOC, but the C didn't stand for course; it stood for collaboration.
It was a
massive open online collaboration. I thought that was actually quite lovely.
Well, I think that's really kind of maybe it's just the way I think about learning and education and things that. It's usually important for personality to be involved in that, and it's hard to see how that transfers to a MOOC. And some of the MOOCs that you see, which are just a set of videos and tests, really, I guess people will learn through that and they'll run through it, but it doesn't feel like what I think of as good learning to do something like that. Unless it's involving, I guess, other people in some ways.
I suppose a key difference, and that's the weaving the web part, isn't it? Everything that is done, everything that you create, everything that you make in DS-106 is not as a kind of an assignment that will be assessed somewhere you don't see. Everything is out in the open and it's in your blog, isn't it? So there is a kind of maybe a different investment in what you do and how you use it, But again, I mean, you know, I've heard Alan and other people talk about how it is the case that a number of the University of Mary Washington students will complete the course and let go of their domain. They don't want it.
Hmm. Well, again, I guess that's. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. You know, if folk don't catch on to the value of holding it on. But they might come back to it and at least be exposed to the idea. I guess the idea of everybody having their own space on the web and using it and being completely open is maybe not universally accepted. Well, certainly not universally accepted. To me, it seems like a really nice idea. I wonder what it would look like if it was everybody. You know, if everybody had that, I was reading and I was in a blog post about talking about young children and giving them blogs on the internet to talk about their learning. And there was a couple of people in the comments said, "Well, you know, there was two different things I thought sort of pertinent here. One was it's just going to fill up the internet with nonsense, you know." I would have thought that was kind of hard to beat. The internet is already so full of nonsense that it's unbelievable. But the other one was about the idea that maybe these people don't want, you know, the poem they wrote in primary four to be online forever. Maybe they don't want that. But again, I kind of push back on that idea, as in these children are probably publishing somewhere else by now. You know, 8, 9, 10-year-olds have got Instagram accounts, Facebook accounts, all sorts of things, and they're posting on the web. So
what's that? You know, it's that really does raise, you know, so many issues, because talking about the whole issue of you know, who owns your data and who owns you, that actually, you know, it becomes okay for us to say they would have an Instagram account or a Facebook account, but somehow having their own space and owning their own stuff isn't necessarily part of it, and we somehow perceive that as less safe somehow, you know. But it's okay to let them have an Instagram account, for example. There's some really interesting tensions, I think, particularly when you're thinking about young people.
I talk a lot about blogging with kids day to day in my day job at the moment, and I keep telling people that I consider it safer to have children doing that and learning about it, because at least they get a chance to make mistakes in a safe-ish environment where they've got some critical friends, i.e. their teachers, hopefully looking out for them, rather than just diving onto Facebook and nobody knowing they were there. So
how do you tackle with I mean, maybe we are diverting from the DS106 a little. Maybe we can come back, but how do you tackle the safety, privacy, all that with younger? When you're setting them up with blogs,
I would say that what you do is you tell children, don't put anything on the internet you wouldn't wear in a t-shirt walking down the street. You know, it's not a place for that. Would you know, you wouldn't put your phone number on a poster and wave it about. There's some very good internet safety. You know, there's very good internet safety videos by various people that point this out, and all you've got to do really is tell them and keep telling them and keep talking about it. And I think that's really valuable, because hopefully that will carry over into their real life, or into their, you know, online life outside of school. But if we just keep telling them, you know, you're too young for Facebook, and you know, you shouldn't be doing this stuff, and you're certainly not going to do it in school. It's not teaching them about it. And I see it as exactly the same thing as allowing children to go out into the playground or, you know, go on a school trip, because those things have risks attached to them. You assess those risks, And you take a call, and if something goes wrong because somebody punches somebody else in the nose in the playground, then you bring them in and you talk to them until they're bored, and then you send them back out again. You know, and that's that's part of their learning. And
I guess it did for me. It kind of, you know, it's more difficult when you're thinking about the implications and consequences online than on the playground. I'm reminded of Jonathan Worth and what he talks about, how you know, we are kind of kidding ourselves if we think that we can give our students enough information for them to really give informed consent about what it is that they're doing, because the reality is that we as educators are not even sure of some of the implications and the consequences of what they're doing, and that we hide behind the idea of, well, we are all experimenting, but it, you know, when you bring in the notion of your duty of care towards your students, it's a big question, isn't it?
I think so, but I think if you've got a duty of care, it very much parallels taking children, you know, to look at the sea or on an adventure course or anything else. You know, these things have got risks. You assess the risk as well as you can.
Yeah.
And nobody can assess them all. And that goes for, you know, taking them a walk down the street and across two roads to go and visit local synagogue or church. You know, it's exactly the same thing. They could get run over. They could, you know, all sorts of bad things could happen. But you try as to your best of your ability to assess the risks, mitigate those risks, and if it looks too dangerous, you don't do it.
I remember, I mean, one of the things that Jim said, you know, Jim saying early on, I saw it on various places as well as on video hangouts, where, you know, that he explicitly tells the students at the university, you know, this is how the course is going to be. It means that everything is going to be open. It means that, you know, this, he kind of spells out all the implications. And if this isn't something that you're comfortable with, then this course is not for you.
Yeah.
And I think there is, you know, as you say, that's the kind of the best we can do. And in that sense, I suppose that's the kind of social contract that we enter into in the context of the S106, which is, you know, we're going to do this thing, and this is how we're going to do it, and it's clear how we're going to do it, and everybody who is involved in the teaching and the participating is doing the same thing. And then, you know, if you're not able to sign up to that, then I guess you look elsewhere.
Yeah, and I think that's the, you know, for older people who are at university, that's the duty of care you've got there, is to tell them, you know, exactly what they're doing, what they're getting themselves into. I mean, I think the letter that usually goes out to people doing DS106 is that, you know, that almost warns them off.
Yes.
By saying, this is going to be hard, you're going to do far too much work.
You never want to sleep.
Yeah, so I think that's okay, and just as I say, I think for younger children, it'd be an abandonment of your duty of care to them, not to tell them about the internet, not to give them a safe-ish space to practice in the same way as you would hopefully have them coming in on their bikes and doing a cycle proficiency badge and practicing, you know, riding along fake streets and stuff like that inside the playground and taking them on from there. I think these things are essential.
Rochelle is asking, how much of the duty of care do we do in the context of how extensive and important do we think that is in the S106? And I think, you know, certainly from the perspective of the students who are at university, and actually for the open participants too, because, you know, I think for me, part of it is this thing that we are talking about, which is the extent to which you are clear about what the expectations are up front.
Mm-hmm.
And then to the best of your ability, because, of course, we're not, you know, we're not perfect. And then people can sign up or not, and if at some point something happens where they're not comfortable, where they don't, then I guess they can, there's always the possibility to stop. Harder when you're doing it for a qualification, of course, than when you are participating as an open participant, because I guess the kind of pressures when you're wanting to get your credits is probably different, and maybe pushes you sometimes to do stuff that you might otherwise not want to do. So I think it's harder in that context when you've got the qualification.
Hmm.
But I don't know, maybe not. I don't know what you think.
Well, I guess, yeah, if you're going to get a mark at the end of it, that's one of the problems with the summative assessment, but I'm not going to get to that because...
No, let's not get into that, that's boring. And we're talking the S106.
It's a hot potato in Scottish education at the moment, but we'll leave that. This probably leads on to something else you're thinking about talking about. This idea of what DS106 does, and bullet number 58 is a group of people who love story using the web to weave it. And one of the things that's become more and more sort of common in DS106 is this creation of fictional characters, or fictionalizing our own existence on the internet. And students are encouraged to do that. Well, it's part of the course. I'm thinking very much of the Noir 106, where the students had to build a character up for their radio show, and some of them had Twitter accounts going along with it, wrote in character and all the rest of it. And that leads on, I think, to this post you're pointing to,
yes, because I think there is that the characters thing, and explicitly asking the students. There is the certainly in the open DS106, but I think also in all of them there is the kind of, you know, always a unit that teaches us how to tell stories within the web, and if you think about all of the different fictional characters that we have been. We talked about a couple of weeks ago, didn't we, about all the different characters and how they have their own Twitter account, they have their own blog, they have everything. So effectively, they exist in the context of the web. Alongside that, I woke up this morning to Alec Kouros has published yet another post on all the issues that he has with scamming, the use of his photographs for creating fake accounts and all the story around that. And what was striking to me about this particular post was he describes how the scammers had actually created several accounts on Facebook. With his photographs and photographs of his whole family, including grandma, including the death of somebody, it's horrific things, really. And they'd used all these photographs and connected them up together in separate accounts to create basically a fake life that of a person, you know, Andy Smith. Who then started to use all of those accounts as evidence for I'm going to go and date online. But of course, you know, the whole scam thing about, you know, taking money from people and so on, and he's been on the receiving end of that for far too long now. And it's an interesting. So what then Jim sent a tweet this morning, retweeting the post and saying that it was, you know, disturbing shit, you know, that was contained in the post. And where I came across the idea that I thought we could talk about it a little today was because in putting those two things together, it made me think, actually, you know, all the stuff that we make available for our week where we are telling stories within the web and beyond, really, isn't that a how-to for all the scammers?
I guess it's the same process you're going through, but it's do you do something for good or for evil sort of thing, but also part of you hope DS106 iterates or reiterates many times things about Creative Commons and copyright and all the rest of it. And although people very often do, I guess, break copyright or fly close to the parody winds of copyright. They're very aware of it.
So you're highlighting the fact that, at least in the context of the S106, one of the things that we also do, and this is true, is to actually make people aware of ownership, license, and how things are used, and that therefore one would hope that helps people to use. But I suppose if you're setting out to to scam people, copyright is irrelevant, isn't it?
I don't think that anybody could pick up DS1 or would bother to pick up DS106 and use it to learn to do this, because I think there's probably other ways in it. I'm sure somebody has somewhere got a big fat scammer's toolkit.
Oh, you think so? Yeah. And that's fun. So we shouldn't worry that what we're posting can be used for evil.
No, I think we're okay. But I think
I think you're being a bit idealistic there, John.
We're also looking at understanding how it works and then having the tools to understand the how these things work. And I noticed Alan Levine was posting about something very similar. Somebody's making this fake Facebook account using his photographs and photographs of himself.
Yeah.
And on his blog, he's sort of gone through all the ways that he's traced this down and found out as much as he can about what's going on and who's going on. And it's that understanding of the web that you need if you're going to be at least semi-protected from that.
Yeah.
Just a wee aside, I see David's always saying that he feels DS106 has been one of the most, and he says, copyright agnostic educational communities. And I always kind of think that in DS106 I very much respect the copyright of individuals and in important ways. Like, I wouldn't go in if I needed a picture of something for it's gone too fast, but I wouldn't go in and borrow a photograph of somebody on Flickr that wasn't shared under a CC license to make something for DS106. I might take a wee clip out of an old black and white movie or even the latest blockbuster and use that, but I'm kind of morally okay with that.
I think that's the point, isn't it? I think David is right that we do tend to to use stuff that perhaps we shouldn't, if we are going to take as our frame the kind of traditional copyright thing. But I think there is alongside that use, there is a sense of we are conscious of what it is that we're doing. And there is a philosophy, a rationale behind the doing of it. Like when you argue with YouTube about, I have a right to use this thing because of fair use, and people that spend, months and years arguing about, something that actually you'd go, well, just take it down and don't worry. But there is a kind of principle that's behind, a kind of ideology in some ways, I'd say, behind the agnostic the copyright agnostic kind of approach. But I suppose there is also that thing that says, in some ways, we own the ideas in our own heads. We have the right to riff on our own culture. He's expressing the ideology for us.
Yeah. But I mean, just a minute ago, he said, what about gifts from films? And I would see gifts from films as, a free gift from a gift. If I give a film, it's a free gift from me to the makers of the film as an advert. It's also such a tiny bit of the thing that I don't feel bad at all about that. And I guess on this stuff, I would go on two things. One, is it going to endanger my pocket? And it isn't, because if somebody came after me, I would just take whatever it was down and roll over, I think. and with individuals, say people who've done Flickr stuff, or you know, put a bit of music on, if I wanted a soundtrack for something, I wouldn't use something that somebody put on if they weren't happy with it being used. But I do think the odd wee bit of a
I think there is that, you know, that we do, that there's a reality that we use stuff, and in a way, you know, picking up on, I mean, Kathy's talking about the importance of the kind of digital literacy skills, she calls them, you know, we kind of learn about all of that. We learn about what happens with YouTube when, you know, we make jokes about how Jim has been banned from YouTube and, you know, and why, and you talk that through. And, you know, there is a kind of learning about all that is behind the how much can you use for what purpose, where, all of that, including then getting really good at finding, you know, music that you can use and finding images that you can use, etc. Over time, that happens, and I suppose getting clear on what your own ideology is going to be. Where do you stand in relation to? Because I know there are some people, you know, within the DS106 community that are not either not a atheist or agnostic, but I do still believe in copyright. Because there is a kind of, you know, there are people that say, well, how else will artists actually get paid, and how do you then create a model where that happens? So, you know, that there are different perspectives, but in a way, that's the point. You learn all of that, don't you? And you learn what your position is. I'm ignoring because I'm sure they're laughing together there, and we're not going to be able to talk. What are they saying?
Yeah, I'm jumping up.
This is why the DS106 isn't a cult. Not enough rules. This is true. We don't have enough rules in DS106. But I wanted to pick up on what, you know, Kathy was saying about the kind of the skills to verify source and determine fact from fiction. And whilst I would say that the idea of that is wonderful, and that, yes, absolutely, I think, you know, a lot of what we do in DS106 helps people, you know, helps people learn how to determine fact from fiction, because you learn, as you were saying, like with the post that Alan wrote, you know, you learn kind of how do you look behind the scenes, how do you connect this, that, etc., how do you do a reverse image search, all of these things that help you. I have to say that all these people that are getting scammed with Alex photographs probably do not have the kind of skill to be able to learn all of those things, I mean, they might be able to learn it, but they don't even know they need to learn it. And I think that's the kind of, you know, the sort of dark side, the disturbing part of it, because they are kind of, you know, using the same playground, but, you know, in like you know, we were saying, I think earlier, you know, you're kind of, you know, in the play, but the bullies in the playground as well as the ones that are having just having fun, but it's the same playground.
Yeah, but. We can't not play, you know. We need to play, and it may be sometimes you need to duck out of that for one reason or another. But we shouldn't sort of withdraw, I don't think.
Interesting you're saying about, you know, because it's I think Alec is a great example of how you tackle it in an open way, without withdrawing and without changing your behavior as a result of what's happening. He's a great example for that. I have mixed feelings about how, you know, about it all, but, you know, that's probably a different story. But it is interesting. It's that whole thing which I think, again, you know, over time, the DS106 helps you form a view about how do you tackle these difficult situations. What are you willing to do, not do? To what extent are you going to walk away, not walk away from this, participate in that, not participate in this, because of where you feel your boundaries are in terms of where you feel safe or not safe?
I think it's back to this, you know, people make the decisions, but things like DS106 help you by informing you and help you make that decision. And I think if there's something unpleasant happened to me, I would much more likely put my tail between my legs and run like hell. But hopefully, as I was running, I would be thinking, I'm running as an informed choice here, you know.
Running as an informed choice, I'm going to have to write a blog post on that.
You know, but I don't think, you know, we're not all up for that sort of bravery, if maybe it is, or just to be able to, the intensity of tackling that sort of stuff. And it may be that people leave, or that, and you can think of, you know, some really serious, horrible things have happened to people online which have made them leave completely, and you can understand that completely.
That's why I think that, you know, Alec Rose is great in the, you know, as an example, and in terms of, you know, how do you handle it in an intelligent way, and at the same time, you know, not make decisions to not change your behavior, because you don't want to be, you know, controlled by these people, and I absolutely understand that. At the same time, I'm not quite sure how much impact, you know, how much impact he can have, because, you know, clearly he has been trying for a long time. He's desperately looking for somebody within Facebook that might actually tackle it at a higher level. But, you know, it's part of the nature of the web, isn't it? That all these things get, you know, how do you do it? How do you get rid of it? It's like Alan's thing with his Gary Glower, who was stealing his photographs. And I think it was within a couple of hours of him, he asked everybody to complain to Facebook. Somehow it happened. The profile got taken down, and I think he said something like within less than an hour afterwards, it was back up again.
Yeah.
You know, so it's all those things, and therefore, you know, how do people? It must be terrible for Alec, I think, to find, you know, when he gets the emails from people going, you know, this happened to me, and I realize that it's not you, that somebody's using your photos. You know, it's horrible. It is a disturbing and horrible sight to our playground. So it just made me really think when I read the post today. It made me think that actually it's the same tools that we are using to have fun on the web and to create all our little worlds, and these people are just doing the same, but using it to scam money out of people.
And I think to sort of bring this to a slightly more positive note, Kathy's saying, you know, each needs to learn own boundaries and respect others' right to play, run informed, and find safe group again. And the face-to-face world has the same issues of group scams and harm.
Sure.
But it's easily scaled, shared online, and faster. That's the difference. And I guess that's not going to change, but the best thing to do about it is probably tool up with knowledge. Because that might protect you. Know
yes,
as much as you can and understand as much as you can. And maybe be aware of your own limits as well, and the amount of energy you're willing to put into.
But in our case, you know, we are talking to the converted here.
Yeah.
You know, we kind of, you know, we are doing this and I'm participating in this whole process from a selfish point of view, to keep up with those things, to keep learning, to keep trying this and seeing the consequences, etc. So you are constantly in a kind of learning thing, already committed to the value of it, and hence wanting to learn something about the downsides in order to be able to mitigate against them. But, you know, the billion people on Facebook ain't like that. In fact, of the billion people, how many don't exist because of all these fake profiles? But let's not go there.
I think we'll just have to. I think despite all that, we still don't want to retreat.
You know,
I say individually and personally I might, but I still think we need to, you know, it's important that things like DS-106 exist. There should be more of it. There should be more education about how to behave. And I wonder, and you know, earlier we're kind of, I suppose, half joking about DS-106 being a toolkit for spammers or scammers. But if you have thought about it, it's maybe less likely that you would do that.
But David is saying, you know, that again, that it isn't necessarily, you know, it's not just a digital literacy thing, yeah. You know, that actually people who, you know, who really do understand get caught. And I think in a way that is sort of in the nature of it, you know, that you can create things. Well, like the example of, you know, in Alex, I really do recommend people read it. Maybe you should probably put a link to it when we put the podcast up. You know, because he just, you know, the amount of work that they go to, the scammers, to make it seem credible and to connect this with that and to link that with that and so on. You know, it's like David says, exactly. It's not exactly easy. If your presumption is that people are honest, nice, and, you know, and that sort of speaks to our own quirks, right? You know, if that's your presumption and you have a tendency to trust, you are not likely to go and do all the checks that Alan did after he found the fake profile. You just won't do that, will you? You'll do a few checks and think, oh, well, this seems okay. And it's a really, really, I don't think there are any easy answers. It's a difficult issue. I think Alec is a great example of, you know, as I say, handling this and something else happens and you think, oh God, you know, and he's not going to manage to deal with it, but, you know, he somehow uses everything that happens to help people learn and teach, you know, so he does a screencast of doing reverse image search and puts that on his blog so that the people that are being scammed can at least, you know, this is one way in which you can check whether this is real or not. I think that it's just really wonderful thing to do, and I have a huge amount of respect for him, but I'm not sure that I would have the, as you said, the strength really to keep managing that. And I'm going to ignore David's comment earlier, but that because he's so dreamy, he said.
Well, that's maybe why I've never been
he's
chosen.
Dreamy.
Maybe you should be upset.
He should not be subjected to this just because he's dreamy.
But maybe that's a wee bit of jealousy there, coming in, David. although I must say, his Twitter icon is looking good at the moment.
Oh yes, because he's got that firework. He's getting all those people that are looking very dashing. Know that when he puts his own photo up, he's not dashing. Let's just be clear about this, because otherwise, you know.
maybe we should kind of. I don't know. We can draw this to a logical or sensible conclusion.
Do you think we could try?
What's the difference that makes the difference was what we started with, and
conversations like the one we've just had.
So yeah, and I think that's it. You know, you don't just leave it and to people. They don't leave the playground to the bullies.
Oh, that's a lovely way to end. Exactly. We don't bloody well leave the playground to the bullies. We deal with the bullies.
Yeah.
That's right.
And the other thing is that we've got some big pals. There are some smart people around, and you know, that can help you. And that's what makes DS-106 work, I think. It's the personal connection, which gets us back to the original bullet as well. What makes it not necessarily mookish. It's the people and the relationships and the learning, and that's probably as good a protection you'll get against bad stuff. And it's maybe not bulletproof, but it's the best shot we've got. Talking of bullets,
true, but you reminded me once a long time ago. I remember I got scared about something that happened. I don't remember what it was in the early days. And I emailed Alan to say, you know, blah, blah, blah. I can't remember the detail. And immediately he kind of went, you know, he could wrap his website up. The person that was being annoying.
Yeah.
But you know, immediately I went, you know, I'm worried about this. You know, what is this? And he helped out, yeah? And other people would do the same. So there is that, isn't there, which is
yeah. And that's
relationships. And you're feeling, okay, I'm going to try this thing, even though I'm not sure, because I feel that, you know, people would support me, which goes back to the kind of community thing, I guess.
Yeah. Mm. And we are, of course, trapped in DS-106. For life.
You see, we should have had Hotel California to play out.
We got some bullets. I'm going to fire up some bullets now, and we'll see everybody can listen to us next week. I'll have this up on the blog at some time. Here's we go with a new bullet.
DS-106 Radio for life.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We're trapped.
Mantras and poems for the DS-106 Good Spell.